And a very warm welcome to all of you. Mike Cavalli here. And joining you and me on the show today is our very special guest. That is you. Just to give you the bit of a heads up here, this is a new platform that we're working with today. This is the first show on this platform. And so we're just trying things out a little bit here today. And over the course of time, we will tweak this and get some kind of profile going here. But in the meantime, we'll just get started and see where this all takes us. And so I think it's best to, first of all, start off explaining really what this show is and what this show isn't. This is the Mediumship Show. And on this show, we're going to be talking about all things mediumship. We'll be talking about the afterlife, proof of survival, evidential mediumship. These topics will include near-death experiences, deathbed visions, out-of-the-body experiences, many others, physical mediumship, healing, remote viewing, and remote distant healing. There's quite a lot to get through. Tonight, we're going to be looking at near-death experiences. But I think it's fair to say that this show is not actually a psychic call-in. This is not a psychic hotline where people call in and find out what's happening about their career or their loved ones and so on and so forth. There are, as I'm sure you're aware, many, many shows that deal with this. And you can go over and hear some of my shows that I used to do. If you're interested in that, just drop me a line and I will give you the link to those shows. But here we're dealing with mediumship, proof of survival. And as we go on in the show, I will see who comes through from the spirit world. Maybe it's for a caller, maybe it's for a listener, maybe it's for a listener who will be listening to this show on playback. So that's the idea. That's the general picture about what we're going to do here today. So let's begin this series of talks. And hopefully you'll join in. Really want to hear from you. I'd love to know your experiences. If many of you have had a near-death experience, then please let us know. It's important to share this information. Why is it important? Because there are many people right at this present moment in time who are experiencing a loved one making the transition into the higher realms, into the light. And it can offer some comfort to them to know that they are going to a better place. Now, many people know that there is proof of survival. Many people know that life continues after we leave the earthly body. But somehow, because of religion, because of upbringing, because of programming, there's always doubt. They doubt. And so by offering your experience of a near-death experience, this can offer comfort to them. And I think in this day and age, we really need to look at supporting each other in any way we can. So don't forget, if you've got something you want to say, simply call in and express your opinion. In the meantime, I'd like to share with you some examples of people who have had near-death experiences. Well, one of the most well-known NDE was actually by a successful neurosurgeon called Aben Alexander. This neurosurgeon taught at Harvard Medical School and other universities. He spent his life dismissing claims of these heavenly out-of-body experiences and refuting such talk with scientific logic. I actually have a friend who's a neurosurgeon, and he is exactly the same. You know, once you die, once the brain's dead, that's it. Well, anyway, over the years, he personally dealt with hundreds of patients suffering from severe alterations in their level of consciousness. Many of those patients were rendered comatose by trauma, brain tumors, ruptured aneurysms, infections, or strokes. Now, as a neurosurgeon, Dr. Alexander, quote unquote, knew that what people of faith called the soul is really a product of brain chemistry. He thought that NDEs, or near-death experiences, in truth, they were simply fantasies produced by the brain under extreme stress. Until, that is, he himself had a near-death experience. Now, during that time, Dr. Eben Alexander says he saw heaven and knows the afterlife exists. Now he's telling the world about this, and he's been doing so for a while in his book, Proof of Heaven. By the way, his story was cover featured in one of Newsweek's issues, which had the headline, Heaven is Real, A Doctor's Experience of the Afterlife. Eben Alexander's journey to the afterlife happened when he slipped into a coma in 2008 after contracting a very rare bacterial meningitis. He said that he traveled through this heaven surrounded by millions of butterflies with a woman. Interesting, as we all know, butterflies are a symbol of transformation. He said that this woman gave him three messages. The first one was, you are loved and cherished and dearly forever. The second was, you have nothing to fear. And the third is, there is nothing you can do wrong. So eventually the neurosurgeon awoke from the coma and penned the book Proof of Heaven. Naturally, there's a lot more to this story. He goes on to talk about how he met someone in the spirit world that he only knew in the spirit world and not on the earth plane. And either by coincidence or synchronicity, whatever, he was talking to a woman who had recently lost her daughter, and he saw the picture of her and asked, is this your daughter? And she said, yes. And he gave her her name, details about this woman, about the daughter, that he could not have possibly have known. She wouldn't have told him. He never knew her before. This is one of the most profound near-death experience stories there is. And if you go to YouTube, you can find this story. He often gives lectures, and there's an hour talk on his whole experience. It's certainly well worth watching. And if you know anybody who's actually experiencing this, a loved one transisting at this time, it'd be very helpful to get them to watch it, because his story actually is only one of thousands of people, regular people, who have told their story to IANS, the International Association of Near-Death Studies. But what makes this story so interesting is that Eben Alexander, I believe, was an atheist. He just didn't care for life after death. It didn't exist. When you die, you die. That's it. End of story. Well, it turns out he was proven wrong. Another example of the out-of-body component or near-death experience is the case of Jasmine Sidavia di Repentigny of Hull, Georgia. That's Hull, Georgia, and not Hull of the in the UK. She died on the operating table during surgery in the late 70s, 1979. And her story, like these others I'm going to tell you, has been accounted for in a paperback called Beyond the Light. She said that, I must say that this experience was quite unsettling, to say the least. I was floating out of my body. I could see and hear everything that was being said and done. I left the room for a short while and then returned to where my body lay. I knew why I died. It was because I couldn't breathe. There was a tube down my throat and the medical staff did not have an oxygen mask on my nose. I had also been given too much anesthetic. In my out-of-body state, I'm using my mind to try and make my right arm and hand move. My arms are extended, parallel to my physical body. I want my right hand to move, anything to move. I was trying to pull the tube out of my mouth. I looked down at my face and tears were streaming. One of the nurses blotted the tears from my face, but she didn't notice my breathing had stopped, nor did she see me next to her. At this point, I'm trying really hard to make my physical arm move, but it's like my whole body is made of lead. Sidavia's determination in her out-of-the-body state to make an arm move finally paid off, and with great clamour and commotion, the tube was pulled out, an oxygen mask was attached, and her breathing restored. She had a similar near-death episode when she was hospitalised at 13 and again in 1991 when she faced death a third time. The more recent occurrence suffered from a nearly fatal bout of pneumonia. Only this time, she witnessed her own soul as a spirit residing out of her body. I could see my spirit standing before me. My spirit was so beautifully perfect, dressed in a white gown that was loose, free-flowing, and below the knee. From my spirit, there emanated a bright, soft, white halo. My spirit was standing 6 to 8 feet from my body. It was so strange, for I could see my spirit, and my spirit could see my pathetic body. I had not an ounce of colour, and I looked all withered, cold and lifeless. My spirit felt warm, and so celestial. As my spirit slowly moved away, my spirit told my body goodbye, for my spirit saw the light and wanted to go into it. The light was like a circular opening that was warm and bright. Sidavia spoke of feeling torn between two worlds, wanting to remain on Earth while at the same time feeling a strong pull to unite with her spirit self and pass into the light. After another round of hospitalization, she was left confused and disorientated, ready to change her life, yet hesitant to begin. She lamented about the lack of people she could discuss her situation with, although her church bishop did express some degree of understanding. Her lament is commonly shared by most experiencers. This is very, very true, and in particular, with someone like Aben Alexander also, he had to be very careful who he would share this information with, because his fellow doctors, certainly in the public arena, would have to distance themselves from him if he spoke out publicly, which he did, because it doesn't go down too well, this type of thing. Also, there are other experiences where the person concerned, perhaps they died on the operating table or in a car accident and were resuscitated, but prior to that, when they were in the spirit world, they expressed the desire not to come back. There was one case at one of the IANS lectures where this was exactly the case, and her guide said, well, you have to go back, it's not your time. But she felt so much love here, so much assurance that she wanted to stay, and the guide insisted, you have to go back, you have a child to look after. Now imagine this, that the mother, a love for her daughter throughout all of this, said, no, my sister can look after my daughter. I trust my sister. My daughter will be fine. But the guide insisted and said, no, this is not your time. And she came back. And her life changed forever, as it does with all people that experience these near-death experiences. And so there's the case of Robin Michelle Halberdier of Texas City. He says, my first visual memory was looking forward and seeing a brilliant bright light, almost like looking directly at the sun. The strange thing was, I could see my feet in front of me as if I were floating upwards in a vertical position. I do not remember passing through a tunnel or anything like that, just floating in the beautiful light. A tremendous amount of warmth and love came from the light. There was a standing figure in the light, shaped like a normal human being, but with no distinct facial features. It had a masculine presence. The light I have described seemed like it emanated from that figure. Light rays shone all around him and says, I felt very protected and safe and loved. The figure in the light told me, through what I know now to be mental telepathy, and that I must go back, that it was not time for me to come here. I wanted to stay because I felt so full of joy and so peaceful. The voice repeated that it wasn't my time. I had a purpose to fulfill and I could come back after I completed it. The first time I told my parents about my experience was right after I began to talk. At the time, I believed that what happened to me was something everyone experienced. I told my mum and dad about the big glass case I was in after I was born and the figure in the light and what he said to me. They took my reference to the glass case to mean the incubator. My father was a medical student at the time and he had read a book about near-death experiences. From comparing the information in the book with what I told them, they decided that's what I was describing. My mum told me all these years later when I brought up the subject again. I began attending church at the age of 5 and I would look at the picture of Jesus in the Bible and tell my mum that's who it was in the light. I still have many physical difficulties with my health because of being premature. But there is a strong need inside me that I should help others with what death is and talk to terminally ill patients. I was in the other world and I know there is nothing to be afraid of after death. And actually, you know, death really is a horrible word, isn't it? It's so final. It's quite destructive. Passing, transition. This is much easier also. This is also very helpful when we talk to people who are witnessing a loved one transitioning or passing. It certainly doesn't feel like the end, like death is. You see, half the problem is the programming that we have received. And certainly coming from a Catholic background, death is pretty much final. We grew up believing that we die and that's it until we are called on Judgment Day, you know. So what happens? What do we do? What are we doing? Are we in a cocoon? Is our mind blank until Judgment Day? And that's only a temporary reprieve, I might tell you, according to Catholic doctrine. Then you've got to get the thumbs up from the Master himself. It's a very, very scary religion to be in when I was growing up. I think it's changed a little bit now. Because what happens is that when we pass, we talk about this judgment day. Again, it's my understanding that the judgment, and we see this again with many, many near-death experiences, that the judgment that we talk about is really self-analysis, and you can approve or disapprove yourself. And that's all there is to it. There is no one pointing a finger at you. Even if you've been a bad boy or a bad girl, there's nobody going to give you the thumbs up or the thumbs down. It is true that perhaps if you haven't learned all the lessons that you need to learn, then you have to go back. Sometimes you can learn those lessons from the other side. And I invite people who have been thinking about spirituality, have been thinking about the other world, which is all around us, by the way. As I sit here and talk about this, and you sit here and listen to this, it's all around us. It's just a different frequency. And that's it, nothing else. And actually, this is why mediums can actually connect with the other side. It's tuning into that frequency. And everyone can do this. Now, before we go on and I talk about some other near-death experiences, I want to say that, and I know many of my colleagues won't be happy with me saying this, but everybody is a medium. Yes, it's true. We say everyone is psychic, but not everyone is medium. That I don't believe to be the case. I believe everyone has the ability to be a medium. Some are going to be better than others because some have come back to the earth plane simply to do this as part of their work, to communicate with the other side, to offer comfort, love and support to those who have lost a loved one. So this is the story with this. So getting back to my point actually about judgment, there is no judgment. We analyze our life and we take a good look at it. And that's where it begins and that's where it ends. When we look at things really in the cold light of day, is a God, an omnipotent being, an omnipotent energy, going to be so narrow-minded as to punish people for misdemeanors, if you like? Okay, you know, life is full of traps, isn't it? No, it doesn't work like that. This is my understanding. Maybe you have a different understanding. Call in and express your views on this. But maybe for you, your reality is different to mine. But we'll get into that a little bit more. Let me give you another story of another near-death experience. This is a short one. This is about Janine Wolfe of Troy, New York. She was 30 years old at the time of her NDE. And she says, "Suddenly, I was aware of being in the most beautiful garden I've ever seen. I felt whole and loved. My sense of well-being was complete. I heard celestial music clearly and saw vivid coloured flowers like nothing seen on earth, gorgeous greenery and trees. As I looked around, I saw at a distance on a hill Jesus Christ. All he said to me was that it was up to me whether to come back or stay. I chose to come back to finish my work. That is when I was born again. The changes in my life, I am now more aware of people's feelings, belief and needs. I'm more compassionate and considerate to others. Also more confident in God's love." That was a very a simple NDE. Once again, if you just joined us, I encourage you to go to YouTube and click on IANDS, I-A-N-D-S, the International Association of Near-Death Studies. There are literally hundreds of accounts of people who have had near-death experiences, who have temporarily gone over to the other side through a car accident or something happened on the operating table, and they experienced the afterlife and have come back. And it does change you. Maybe some point down the line, I'll get into my NDE that I had as a child. Well, okay, let's talk about my NDE as a child. It wasn't very dramatic, and I don't remember it in that much detail, but what I'm certain is it was then that it put me on the path to doing this work, because after that experience, then I began to see our brothers and sisters in the spirit world as clearly as I could see any earthly person walking down the road. But my near-death experience was really quite straightforward. I was about 5 or 6 years of age, and I was playing in my bedroom with my brother, and I swallowed a marble. I don't remember anything else except me looking at me on the bed. I was at the other end of the room. My mother came in, and she shook me, turned me upside down and bashed me on my back, and plop, out fell the marble. And the next minute I knew I was back on my bed. You don't forget an experience like that. That never leaves you. The details could be a little bit sketchy, but that experience doesn't leave you. I didn't see any tunnel. I didn't see any light. All I knew is one minute I was on the bed, and the next minute I was looking at myself slumped over the bed. That was it. It was a very, very quick process for me. I didn't see anybody. There was nobody sitting next to me or standing next to me. It just wasn't my time. I guess it was a dumb thing to do, wasn't it? Anyway, I believe that was the path that set me off on this journey. One of the things I want to say is when we do our spirit communication circle, and you can try this at home yourself as well if you choose, is we do a guided meditation, and I take people on this meditation to meet their guide. And on the path to meet this guide, pretty much deep into the meditation when they're really quite open, is ask them to be aware of who they see along the path. Anybody that they know that has passed over the period of time, a loved one, a friend, a pet. Quite often pets turn up. The result is often someone who they'd completely forgotten about, someone completely from childhood, and they remember them with great detail. This is one of the great things about a guided meditation, as we take them through the process to go and meet their guide. And obviously the guide gives them information, or invite the guide to give them some information. And if you do this, there is a process to this, and that is simply allow the process. When your guide comes, you may not see your guide, you may not hear your guide, but just to know that your guide will be there. And how does the information come through? That varies from everybody. You may be given it in the form of a picture. You may hear it with your inner ear, clairaudience. You may simply feel what your guide is telling you. Or there may be simply a feeling of knowing. Nothing was said, nothing was felt, nothing was seen. Simply knowing. This quite often happens to people in meditation. And allow the process. If nothing comes, don't worry this time. It takes practice, but you only need to do 15 minutes a day to begin with and build up to it. Another technique, actually. Here's something else that I do, and it's all to do with intention. So it's not a near-death experience as such. It's an out-of-the-body experience, astral travel. Every single one of us do this every night, and there's a difference between dreams and astral travel. And you can train yourself to meet who you want to meet in the spirit world. It takes time. It doesn't always happen. Or more accurately, it does always happen. You just don't always remember it, because the trick to this is to wake up and recall it immediately, because if you leave it for more than 10, 15, 20 seconds, the link starts to break down and you'll forget it. But once you connect and once you wake up with the intention of remembering, then bit by bit, day by day, the links and the build up and the memory and the amount you remember becomes clearer. Many of you may already know this, and you may be connecting with your mum or dad who's in the spirit world. And quite often you will meet them at an age a lot younger than when they passed. This is because it's most likely a period of their life where they really felt the most happiest. So if you want to do this, set the intention before you go to bed of a night time. Set the intention on who you'd like to speak with. Set the intention to ask that you'd like to remember it also. And be patient if it doesn't happen from the first time you do this, because it just takes a little bit of practice. So I'm going to give you another near-death experience account right now. And I think this will probably be the last one that I do. It's a rather long one, but so let's see what happens here. I have got somebody coming through in spirit right now, and I'm just going to let them just hang around a little bit, and maybe I'll connect with them after I do this little experience that I'm going to give you by this guy. Back in 1932, Arthur E. Jensen, a university graduate and a staunch materialist turned syndicate cartoonist, decided to take some time off and research his weekly cartoon strip, Adventurous Willy Wispo. He bummed rides from Chicago to Minnesota. A young man in a convertible coupe picked him up on the way to Winnipeg. They were going way too fast for the road conditions, and the car hit a 3-foot-high ridge of oiled gravel and flipped into a series of violent somersaults. Both men were catapulted through the cloth top before the car smashed into a ditch. The driver escaped unharmed, but Jensen was injured, losing consciousness just as two female spectators rushed to his aid. Gradually, the earth scene faded away, and through it, loomed a bright, new, beautiful world beyond imagination. For half a minute, he said, I could see both worlds at once. Finally, when the earth was all gone, I stood in a glory that could only be heaven. In the background were two beautiful round-top mountains, similar to Fujiyama in Japan. The tops were snow-capped, and the slopes were adorned with foliage of indescribable beauty. The mountains appeared to be about 15 miles away, yet I could see individual flowers growing on their slopes. I estimated my vision to be about 100 times better than on Earth. To the left was a shimmering lake containing a different kind of water, clear, golden, radiant, and alluring. It seemed to be alive. The whole landscape was carpeted with grass so vivid, clear, and green that it defies description. To the right was a grove of large, luxuriant trees composed of the same clear material that seemed to make up everything. He said, I saw 20 people beyond the first three trees playing a singing, dancing game, something like Skip to My Loo. They were having a hilarious time, holding hands and dancing in a circle, fast and lively. As soon as they saw me, four of the players left the game and joyfully skipped over to greet me. As they approached, I estimated their age to be 132, 20 and 112. Their bodies seemed almost weightless, and their grace and beauty of their easy movements was fascinating to watch. Both sexes had long, luxuriant hair entwined with flowers, which hung down in glossy masses to their waists. Their only clothing was a gossamer loincloth with a loop over one shoulder and a broad ribbon streaming out behind in graceful curves and curlicues. Their magnificence not only thrilled me, but filled me with awe. The oldest, largest and strongest looking man announced pleasantly, "You're in the land of the dead. We lived on earth just like you till we came here." He invited me to look at my arm. I looked, and it was translucent. That is, I could dimly see through it. Next, they had me look at the grass and the trees. They were also translucent. It was exactly the way the Bible had described heaven. Then I noticed that the landscape was gradually becoming familiar. It seemed as if I'd been here before. I remembered what was on the other side of the mountains. Then a sudden burst of joy, I realized that this was my real home. Back on Earth, I'd been a visitor, a misfit, and a homesick stranger. With a sigh of relief, I said to myself, "Thank God I'm back. This time I'll stay." The oldest man, who looked like a Greek god, continued to explain, "Everything over here is pure. The elements don't mix or break down as they do on Earth. Everything is kept in place by an all-pervading master vibration which prevents aging. That's why things don't get dirty or wear out, and why everything looks so bright and new." Then I understood how heaven could be eternal. And that was amongst many others, accounts that you can find in a book called Beyond the Light. So these are just some of the many near-death experiences I mentioned earlier, just in case you've joined us. There are hundreds and hundreds of these experiences waiting for people to listen. Please do listen to them. They're really inspiring. And even if you're not actually experiencing somebody who's making the transition, it will really clear up any doubt about the other side, because it really is all down to you. It's all down to intention. It's all down to how you see yourself. And where do you go? Well, there are different dimensions. I'm not one to really quote the Bible, but this is really quite apt, and that is, "In my Father's kingdom there are many palaces." What does it mean? It means you go where your light is best suited. So, you know, you might be in heaven but not on the highest vibration, and you work your way up there I guess like you do everything else, but I'm pretty damn sure that you'll be in a very, very high vibration. You know, I don't want to get into what is hell. I mean, hell and heaven, these are states of existence, states of the mind also. And I really want to keep focusing on really the positive aspect here on this show. So, you know, okay, look, what I want to do is I'm going to wrap this up pretty soon. But what I want to do is tell you who I got here in the spirit world, because this could be for you. This could be for somebody listening to this in replay. But what I do have here, I've got here, is a gentleman that is standing here with me. And he actually is quite a philosophical type of person. I would say he's, well, he looks to be about 65, 70, and he's got quite a lot of lines across his face. He's quite rugged looking, and he's got a thick moustache, which is grey, and he really has this unshaven face. This is how he's presenting himself to me right now. As I say, he's about 60 odd, 65. Actually, yeah, I mean, he looks older than what he actually is, to be quite honest. He is giving me the a name. I don't think it's his name. I'm not sure, but he is giving me the name of John, or the equivalent of John, because I actually don't think he's from the West in the sense of the United States, United Kingdom. This is a name that is not familiar to me. Okay. He seems to have been an educated man, this guy here. He seems to have worked with drawing material or pens and papers. He certainly was somebody that needed to be creative. Okay, I think this is to do with figures. Sorry, he's just insisting that I know that I get this right. It's to do with this. So he could have been an accountant or certainly do with calculations, and it had to be accurate, these calculations. And he was a stickler. He really, in his life, he wanted things to be done correct all the time. He also, thank you, he also used to, looks like, suck sweets as well, boiled sweets. This is because, and he's laughing here, he didn't want, he would get told off for smoking. And so he'd want to try and hide the smoke, but you could smell the smoke on him, on his clothes anyway. So he laughs about this now, actually. yes, these sweets are, they seem to be like boiled sweets. Actually, I spoke about my NDE with the marble. They kind of, he's showing me, they kind of look like that. So they're quite a hard boiled sweet. Oh, okay. So he's giving me breathing difficulties here now as well. Okay. So there was something to do. I feel this was, well, there was actually many things wrong with him. I've got a breathing condition. I'm also going to my head. So I feel that somewhere along the line, he may have had asthma. I don't think this was how he passed, but there was something to do with his brain. I think he may have had a stroke as I start to get a lot warmer around me, particularly around the head. Okay, let's just see what he has to say. Okay. He mentioned somebody beginning with the letter D. It sounded like Dorothy or Doe or something. There's something about the letter D. He mentions this name. Okay. And actually, I think he stepped forward because it could be his anniversary round now, or he speaks of an anniversary. Okay. So he's getting a little bit discreet. He's getting a little bit disgruntled with me at the moment. This would have been his personality on the earth plane. I think he's just trying to express who this is. Okay, January is important. And towards the end of January, towards the end of the month of January, is an important time for him. I'm going to ask him to step back a little bit as my breathing gets a little bit difficult. So he certainly had an asthmatic problem here with the chest. Okay, he did leave behind a wife or a partner, and it seems like two children. It feels like two children, although one of the children may have come from another marriage, or there's a step relationship there. It could possibly be when we have step relations, step, that kind of feeling. It could be because with one of the children, it was slightly estranged. However, so he brings all this information through. Why is he bringing all this information through? Because, okay, let's just, okay, look, and he wouldn't have said this on the earth plane, but whoever this is for, he wants you to relax a little bit, okay, and because you're too much like him, and it isn't going to get you anywhere. All it's going to get you is a lot of stress, okay, and he's suggesting to just set back a little bit, just relax, go with it, thank you, just go with it. Okay, this person who this message for, it's for a project that this person is doing, has been working on for a hell of a long time, and he says, build it and they will come, build it and they will come. Stop talking about it, stop stressing over it, just do it. And he says it in that tone, just do it. So, okay, look, that's what I have for you. He's going to step back now. And quite a nice chap, actually, over the other side now. He's quite settled. He's quite calm. He's got a brother over there as well. He just mentioned, I think he's over there. He just mentioned brother anyway. And I saw somebody standing next to him. So I assume it's brother. And this would be an older brother that was there as well. And this older brother quite liked cigars. I think certainly he may have liked the odd smoke as well, with a nice cigar. So that was who I had there. I'm going to ask him to step back now. But, you know, if you just joined us, this is the first show I've done on this platform, and I've got a lot of tweaking to do with it just yet. I don't have anybody here that's doing research or checking the callers before they come in. So, you know, we're just playing this by a wing and a prayer, for want of a better phrase, at the moment. So I'm going to be back next week anyway with another show. But, you know, I want to leave you with this thought. It's a wonderful thought, and it's a poem by Bishop Henry Brent, and it's really about what actually he uses the word dying. As you know, I don't like that word, but the poem is this: what is dying? He says, I am standing on the seashore, a ship sails to the morning breeze and starts for the ocean. She is an object, and I stand watching her, till at last she fades from the horizon. And someone at my side says, she is gone. Gone where? Gone from my sight, that's all. She is just as large in the masts, hull, and spars as she was when I saw her, and just as able to bear her load of living freight to its destination. The diminished size and total loss of sight is in me, not in her. And just at that moment, when someone at my side says, she is gone, there are others who are watching her coming, and other voices taking up a glad shout. There she comes. And that is dying. So there you go, folks. That's it for today. I hope you enjoyed the information that I shared with you today. Next show will be next week. Don't be shy. Call in. Maybe I haven't adjusted the platform, the dashboard, quite correctly just yet to allow for all this. But if you've got any comments, please make them. I'll try and answer your comments. I've still got a lot of work to do just yet. I've got some private readings to do now. And so look, I look forward to your company next week. Thank you for joining me. And whatever you're doing, have a great day. Live in the now, live in the present. And when you're in the now and you're in the present, you don't have worry, fear, or anxiety. So this is Mike Cavalli on the Mediumship Show, signing off, saying bye-bye for now.